Welcome to Christchurch Manchester Sermon Podcast.
We are one church that meets in various locations across Greater Manchester.
For more information about who we are or where we meet,
please visit www.christchurchmanchester.com.
Munich in Germany, for those of you who don't know, and when we were kind of going out, getting to know each other, I'd fly across, see her in Munich in Germany, and she'd come across and see me. But one of the things I used to do when I was getting to know Elizabeth in Munich is when I was in Munich, I would go and do like walking tours, you know, of the city. I love like a walking tour, or any kind of tour basically, where you find out, you know, a bit of a nerd, you find out a bit of history about the city. So I would do that with Munich. And after doing a few walking tours, I discovered that a particular person from history spent a lot of time in Munich, and it was this guy who's going to appear. Adolf Hitler spent a lot of time in Munich, and I did not know that before I went out with Elizabeth. Apparently, Munich was like his second home, so much of his kind of early adult life was spent living and working in Munich. He tried to make it as an artist in Munich, but failed. He started public speaking in Munich. Never done any public speaking before. His first speech was in a beer hall in Munich. He decided to get into politics in Munich, and he started a small political party in Munich called the Nazi Party. All these things he did in the city of Munich, and I learned all these things as I started doing these tours. I'm like, wow, Munich is... Hitler has spent a lot of time in this city of yours, Elizabeth. So we had some interesting conversations. Anyway, we'll not go into that. But leave that aside for a second. So 15 years ago, Elizabeth and I had been going out for a year or two, and she got a summer job. And this summer job she was doing was working in an old people's home, as many people do. So she phoned me about 15 years ago, told me this story. She says, yeah, I've been in an old people's home today, and I've been sitting next to this old lady's bed, and she starts chatting to me, lady in her 90s, and this lady, she shared a story with me. And she said, I was like, oh, what's the story? She says, well, basically, she says, when I was a little girl, long, long time ago, as a little seven-year-old girl, we were in school, and someone came in and said, Hitler's around the corner. Adolf Hitler's around the corner delivering a speech. So immediately, all of us jumped up from our desks and just ran out and ran around the corner to see where Adolf Hitler was. And there he was, standing, giving a speech to not very many people, and he just finished giving the speech, and he was handing out bread. This was 1930s in Germany. Germany was in a bad state back then. It was a depression. There was no jobs. There was no food. Everyone was hungry, and people were looking for hope, and here's this guy trying to provide some hope. So this old lady, she shares that when I was a little seven-year-old girl, I ran around the corner. I saw him there giving this speech, handing out bread. So I ran up to him. The crowd wasn't very big. And she says, I ran up to Hitler, Adolf Hitler, and he saw me, and he reached out his hand, and he patted me on the head, and he gave me a loaf of bread. And Elizabeth, listening to this, she was like, whoa, what do you mean? Are you telling me you've met Adolf Hitler? And she's like, yeah. Adolf Hitler patted you on the head and gave you a loaf of bread. She says, yeah, he did. And there she was telling this story. I don't know how many, 80 years later. And that's what Hitler did. Hitler did. Now, when we put this story in context, okay, of all that Hitler did, the reason Hitler gave out bread to hungry people was to get people to follow him. And the reason he wanted people to follow him was so that he could get more power. And the reason he wanted more power was to do the awful things he did, killing millions and millions of people. Okay? Now, I'm going to tell you another story about someone giving bread to hungry people today. This one will hopefully be a more uplifting story than the one I've just shared. This morning, I'm going to talk about Jesus feeding the 5,000. Yeah? You're all glad. You're like, oh, we're glad we're focusing on a different story this morning. But I share that this morning because by way of contrast, because of what Jesus did in feeding the 5,000. Because the reality is, like, unlike Hitler, Jesus didn't give people bread to get power. Because Jesus already had all the power in the world. Okay? No, Jesus fed these 5,000 hungry people to show who he really was. the Son of God who'd come into the world so they could save millions of people. Hitler used feeding hungry people to hide who he really was and what he intended to do. He's like, oh, look at me, I'm giving out bread, I'm really nice. But the reality is his intentions were so much more sinister and so much more evil than that. Jesus, on the other hand, used feeding hungry people to show who he really was, the savior of the world, the bread of life. And he used this story, feeding these 5,000 people, to show what he intended to do, to be the bread of life to people, to be the bread that never runs out, to offer life and healing and salvation to millions and millions of people. Okay? The complete opposite. Now, over these last couple of months, we've been going through a sermon series, or you've been going through a couple of sermon series, I believe, in the book of John. Is that right? Yeah, sermon series entitled Portrait of Jesus, I think you've been going through different aspects of who Jesus is. So you've seen how Jesus is the Son of the Father. He's the Lord of the Sabbath. He's the healer. He's the living water. He's the Lamb of God. Now, as I mentioned this morning, we're going to be looking at Jesus feeding the 5,000 in John chapter 6. And the aspect of Jesus that we see in this story this morning is Jesus, the heavenly provider. Jesus, the heavenly provider. So that's what we're going to be looking at this morning. Now, what's really interesting about the feeding of the 5,000 is it's the only miracle of Jesus in the Bible, apart from the resurrection, that's recorded in all four Gospels. All four Gospel writers record this miracle. It's the only one that's recorded by all four. So basically, I take that to mean it's a pretty important one, and there's some lessons we should learn from it. So we're gonna read about this miracle just now, John chapter 6, verses 1 to 14. It will appear on the screen, or you can follow in your Bibles if you like. Little bit of background before we get into it. So in John chapter 5, the chapter before, Jesus has been teaching in Jerusalem. He's healed a guy at the pool of Bethesda. And then what John does is he fasts forward 6 months from the end of chapter 5 to the start of chapter 6. Okay, there's a six-month gap. And basically, when we start chapter 6, we reckon we're probably in March 29 AD. Okay, so this time of year, March time in 29 AD. So just think, this time of the year, Israel, a bit warmer. Okay, and 1,995 years ago, so a long time ago. So that's where we are. That's where we pick things up. Okay, we ready to read? Yes, so John chapter 6, verse 1 says this. Sometime after this, Jesus crossed to the far shore of the Sea of Galilee. That is the Sea of Tiberias. Now, just to say, it talks about the Sea of Galilee. We would normally refer to the Sea of Galilee probably as a lake, because the Sea of Galilee is 13 miles long from top to bottom and 8 miles wide. Okay, so you're on one side of it, you can see the other side. Okay, so it's not like a sea, like the Irish Sea or something like that. Okay, now to give you an example, Lake Windermere in the Lake District is 11 miles long, so just 2 miles shorter than the Sea of Galilee, and 1 mile wide, so a lot narrower than the Sea of Galilee. But that's what we're talking about, a fatter version of Lake Windermere that is a bit longer, okay? We're not talking about the Atlantic Ocean here. This is a big lake, all right? So that's the Sea of Galilee, also known as the Sea of Tiberias. Verse 2, and a great crowd of people followed him because they saw the signs he had performed by healing those who were ill. Now, if you've ever wondered, okay, Jesus has gone to the other side of the lake and people followed them. How did the people get to the other side of the lake if they followed him? Well, we've got a little map. It's not the most, detailed map. Well, basically, you can see the red arrow from Magdala to the fish. That is Jesus' route on the boat. So that's him crossing the Sea of Galilee. And the yellow arrows, this is the route that people would have took to get to him. So that's how it would have worked. Verse 3, then Jesus went up on a mountainside and sat down with his disciples. And then verse 4 says, the Jewish Passover festival was near. Now, this is an important little side note here that we often ignore. Because Passover was a time each year when Jewish people remembered their rescue from Egypt through Moses. And it was also a time when they remembered that God had promised them that another prophet like Moses would one day come. And they expected this prophet to bring them deliverance, and they expected this prophet to provide them with manna or bread from heaven, just like Moses had done. Okay, so it's significant that this happens at Passover because this is what was in the forefront of everyone's minds at that time of year, as Passover approached. Then verse 5. When Jesus looked up and saw a great crowd coming towards him, he said to Philip, "Where shall we buy bread for these people to eat?" Now, Philip was a local. He was from the town of Bethsaida, which you can see in the map, if you go back to it, which was close by. So people would naturally think, okay, I can see why Jesus is asking Philip here, because he's from around here. He knows people. He knows who to talk to get some food. But really, that's not why he asked Philip. He didn't ask Philip for that reason at all. No, verse 6 tells us he asked this only to test him, for he already had in mind what he was going to do. Now, verse 7, Philip didn't know this, so he answered, "Jesus, it would take more than half a year's wages to buy enough food for each one to have even a bite." Okay? Now, I'm not going to get into how much everyone earns here, but like, if you imagine what your yearly salary is, and, you know, let's go pre-tax, okay? Just, you know, for people who want clarity, have that and think, okay, that's the amount of money we're talking about here. Not even for everyone in this crowd to have a meal, but for everyone to have a bite, just a tiny bit of food, okay? Verse 8, another of his disciples, Andrew, Simon Peter's brother, spoke up. "Here is a boy with 5 small barley loaves and 2 small fish." Now, barley bread back then was cheap bread. Okay? It was the bread people ate who couldn't afford to make their bread out of wheat. Okay? That was what you wanted to make your bread out of. If you couldn't afford it, you used barley. Okay? So this is poor people's bread. Okay? This is the cheapest stuff you can buy from Aldi. All right? So we're not talking specially selected here. This is the cheap stuff. All right? Now, I don't know if you noticed, everything about what this boy has, what he brings, says small, poor quality, and not enough. You know, we've got barley bread. It's the poorest kind of bread there is. It also says there's small loaves of barley bread. They're not even big ones, you know. It also says they're not even big, plump fish. They're small fish. You know, everything says small, poor quality, and not enough, which is perhaps why Andrew says, after he's introduced the boy, he says, "But how far will they go among so many?" Not very far is what he's thinking. Okay? Verse 10, Jesus said, "Make the people sit down." There was plenty of grass in that place, and they sat down. About 5,000 men were there. Now, in the Matthew version of the story, it says there were 5,000 men besides women and children. Okay? So there were a lot of women and children there also. And if we add all the women and children who were probably there, we're probably talking of a crowd more like 10 to 15,000 people here. Okay? 10 to 15,000 people. We're talking like, you know, a small football stadium full of people here. Now, imagine, I think we've got another picture of that Sea of Galilee. So this is the actual Sea of Galilee. So basically, that is probably roughly where it would have taken place, the feeding of the 5,000. So imagine you're standing on this side of the Sea of Galilee. You can probably see 10 to 15,000 people. There probably were people on this side standing, thinking there, "What are all those people doing there? What is going on?" You could see it from the other side. This was a huge, huge crowd of people. Jesus then took the loaves and he gave thanks. It says, verse 11. Now, Jesus probably used a traditional Jewish thanksgiving prayer, which went something like this. It says, "Blessed be you, Yahweh, our God, King of the world, who causes bread to come forth from the earth." We don't know for sure, but we think that's probably the thanksgiving blessing he would have prayed. And then he distributed to those who were seated as much as they wanted. He did the same with the fish. Then verse 12, when they all had enough to eat, and I think this is key, okay? Like, they didn't get a snack here, okay? This wasn't an appetizer they got. It wasn't fish and bread tapas. they got, which was, you know, to kind of prepare them for the main meal. You know, this was a full meal. You know, this was at the point where you're like, I'm stuffed, I can't eat another bite. That's the point when Jesus says to his disciples, okay, now go gather the pieces that are left over. Let nothing be wasted. Verse 13, so they gathered them and filled 12 baskets with the pieces of the barley loaves left over by those who had eaten. And the other Gospels mention that they gathered up the fish as well. Now Jesus, through this miracle, he provides so much, and I love this, he provides so much that the leftovers were more than the bread that there was to begin with. You know, in case anybody's got any doubt, you know, there's more bread left over here than what we started with. Jesus did an absolutely amazing miracle here, which showed that he is the heavenly provider. Jesus is the heavenly what? Heavenly provider. Now, you know, the thing is, every good thing we have in life has been provided by Jesus. Amen? Every good thing we've been given has been provided by him. From the air we breathe, to the food we eat, to the clothes we wear, all of it has been provided directly or indirectly by him. Now, most of the time, he provides for us through kind of conventional means. You know, he's provided you with a brain, which allows you to work and get a job and earn some money to provide the clothes and food that you need. Okay? So sometimes he provides for us like that. But sometimes he provides for us through miraculous means, like in this story. And you know, often it takes us seeing the miraculous provision of Jesus to remind us that he actually provides us with everything. Everything. And I think that's what this story helps us to see. It's not just thinking about, when was the last time I saw a miracle? It's a reminder, wow, Jesus provides us everything, absolutely everything. Now, when we really believe that Jesus is our heavenly provider, okay? So when we really believe that in our hearts, what that means is, it means we can afford to live sacrificially. We can afford to live sacrificially. Now, think about this little boy. This little boy came and he sacrificed his food. He gave it up. You know, this little boy, like, he's like the only one in the crowd who doesn't need a miracle. You know, he's like, yeah, well, I prepared. You all didn't. I've got my lunch. I'm ready. Like, you know, sucks to be you guys, but look, I've got my bread. See, he didn't need a miracle. He could have just kept his head down, went in a quiet corner, eaten his lunch, but he didn't. He offered it to Jesus, and he offered it because Jesus is the heavenly provider. And because Jesus is the heavenly provider, he multiplied the boy's lunch so that thousands were fed. But it all started with someone choosing to live sacrificially. He didn't know Jesus was going to do that. For all he knew, Jesus was going to take his lunch and say, thanks very much. But he chose to live sacrificially because, yeah, he chose to live sacrificially. Now, when we believe that Jesus really is the heavenly provider, it frees us to live sacrificially. Why? Because when we believe Jesus is the heavenly provider, we believe he'll provide for us whenever we give things up. If we don't believe he's the heavenly provider, we won't do that. Because we won't believe that Jesus can provide for us if we give things up like the boy. Now, one of the most awkward things I've had for the last few weeks was, you know, watching a video of myself. I didn't actually watch it at all. I listened and I cringed as I heard my voice this morning talking about being in Uganda. But I mentioned the guy who started Life Ministries. It's there's 170 churches there. It started 35 years ago when a guy called Emmanuel Richaba started one church. And now it's 170 churches and tons of stuff. There's a hospital, there's a health center, there's loads and loads of stuff. But when that guy Emmanuel, who I've been out to visit numbers of times, when they just started out, there was one church, he felt God say to him, give away your house. Those are one of the things you were like, I want to make sure that's definitely God, you know? But he was like, give away your house so that it can become a health center for the people in the slums around where you live. And he did. He gave away his house. So we got a picture. House on the left, that was Emmanuel's house, 35 years away. He gave away the house, and he moved him and his family into a rented house. Okay? Now, he could only do that because he believed that Jesus is the heavenly provider. He trusted that Jesus would provide, would look after him if he chose to live sacrificially and give up his life. And in time, Jesus did provide. He rented a house for a while, and eventually he was able to buy another house, which is quite a nice house because I stayed in it. It's good, all right? And what God also did with what he did here was God took that offering and he has multiplied that offering 100-fold. Okay, there's now a hospital. The health center is twice the size. There's a primary school, a high school. There's 170 churches rather than one church. There's been thousands of people got saved, healed, helped, poor, lifted out of poverty as a result of that offering. Okay? And I remember hearing about that and thinking, wow, that is powerful. You know, that is powerful. You know, the reason we often don't live sacrificially is because we're afraid that we're gonna be worse off if we do. If I offer my loaves and fishes to Jesus, I'll have nothing. I'll go hungry. I'll be worse off. And you know, that's exactly what Peter was worried about in the Bible. Comes to Jesus, Mark 10. Jesus, we've left everything to follow you. Come on, Jesus. Jesus replies, no one who has left home or brothers or sisters or mother or father or children or fields for me in the gospel will fail to receive 100 times as much in this present age and in the age to come. Peter's like, Jesus, am I going to be worse off because I've made sacrifices to follow you? Jesus is like, no, you're not going to be worse off because I am who? I am the heavenly provider. That's basically what Jesus says. And Jesus took Peter's offering and he multiplied it. You know, Peter and the disciples, they took the gospel to the world. The reason we're sitting here is because of them and because of their offering. Now, sacrificing stuff to Jesus so he can multiply it, it sounds glamorous, doesn't it? I mean, it sounds hard, but it sounds glamorous. It sounds like the thing that, like, if you do it, you'll get invited up to the front of church and share, hey, I sacrificed my house to Jesus, and he's multiplied it millions of times, and you're all saved as a result, and all those people out there are saved. It sounds like a glamorous thing, doesn't it? You know, but most of the time, sacrificing stuff to Jesus so he can multiply it isn't glamorous at all. Most of the time, it happens very quietly in ordinary everyday life. And those are the big ones, you know? Elizabeth and I, we run a community group at the Heaton's site that we lead. Elizabeth says to me, every Wednesday afternoon, without fail, I will say to you, Andy, or I will think it, I don't want to do community group tonight. Man, my kids woke me up at 5 this morning. I'm tired. I want to be in bed by 7:30. Never mind how people, I don't want to do that, okay? But she also says every single time, God provides. And at the end of community group, Elizabeth says, look, we never feel worse off after community group has ended. We never feel worse off when it's over. We never feel worse off because we've given up our evening for group. You know, we're thinking, oh, that was good. That was a blessed time. It was great to share with people. It was great to eat with people. Also, every now and again, you get someone will share just how much they appreciate the group and how much they love the connections that they formed through group and have built there. And we can see, oh yeah, God's doing something here, okay? Now, Elizabeth, my wife, I'm talking about her loads, aren't I? I mean, it's the nice thing when I go to a different site, I can, you know, say what I want about Elizabeth. I mean, you can all text her and say, do you know what Andy said about you today? But she has sacrificed a lot of free time in this last year to serve on the Kids Work Rota at our Heaton site. I mean, pretty much between September and now, she's been in the service probably 4 or 5 times because she's been on 2 different Kids Work teams. But she says, you know what? I ain't moaning. I'm not grumbling because you know what? I'm not worse off for that. I'm not worse off for that. God has provided me for that throughout. It's the stage we're at. It's what we need to do. And he has taught me things through it. I am growing in patience. I'm growing in kindness through doing these things. And also, what I've seen when she's done that is Jesus has taken that sacrifice, that offering over time, and he's multiplying it. He's blessing many kids. He's blessing many parents as well. And perhaps even generations of kids and parents as well. You know, you never know. Like, I mean, I think of my, like, kids' work, Sunday school. I can still remember stuff I learned. I can still remember things I was taught. And that has helped shape my faith. Here I am standing in front of you. I'm using some of this stuff, and I'm teaching my kids the same stuff. God is multiplying that offering, that sacrifice that Elizabeth is giving. And the same is true for lots of you when you serve here. God is multiplying that offering. You see, when we're willing to live sacrificially, offering God our time, our money, our talents, whatever it may be, God will use these ordinary things to create extraordinary things. And I think I want to warn us about, you know, we must never think, you know, that what we have is too little to serve God. We must never think that. God loves taking humble, seemingly insignificant people and using them for his glory, using what they offer to do something great, just like he did with the little boy in the feeding of the 5,000. Amen? So when we believe Jesus is the heavenly provider, it means we can afford to live sacrificially, but it also means we can view things through his eyes. When we believe Jesus is the heavenly provider, it means we can view things through his eyes. Now, the feeding of the 5,000. If there are any accountants here, all right, I agree with you. The numbers do not add up in this story. None of the numbers add up in this story. You know, like Philip's there. He's like, look, half a year's wages won't even provide for everyone to have a bite, you know? Andrew's like, here's a boy's lunch. I won't go very far. You know, I'm just trying to help out, but that's not going to do much. You know, and what they're doing is they're looking at the problem through their own eyes, through human eyes. And it looks impossible. Of course it does. But Jesus sees things differently. You know, it's not too big a problem for him. And you know, when problems come our way, we can think, it's too big. Nothing can be done. But Jesus sees things differently. It says in Mark 10:27, all things are possible with God. Okay? Not some things, not many things, not most things, but all things are possible with God. Now, seeing things through Jesus' eyes means when we see a problem, yeah, we still admit, yes, that's a big problem, but then we say, but God. You know, the problem is big, but God is bigger. I don't know how to deal with it, but God knows how to deal with it. This problem seems impossible, but with God, all things are possible. It's a completely different way of viewing things, and it will transform how you go through stuff. Regardless of whether you get the thing at the end that you want or you need, or it completely changes your attitude about how you go through it. And that's the key thing. Now, last summer, a guy from one of the other CCM sites, a good friend of mine, he lost his job very unexpectedly. He's got a young family, two kids, and he's like, how am I going to make ends meet? You know, this is big. But as I chatted to him, it was clear that he was viewing this problem through the eyes of Jesus. You know, he had a real attitude of, yes, it's a big problem, but God is bigger. You know, he didn't negate the fact that it was a problem. But he was like, yeah, God is bigger. And through this very difficult time, I found it interesting, he stayed remarkably calm through it all. Remarkably calm through it all. And that was not because he had a job lined up. It was not because he's like, oh, I'm very employable. Of course I get a job. It was not because, you know, any of that. But he was viewing it through Jesus' eyes. And I chatted to him, and he was constantly saying to me, and I was like, yeah, it's a problem. But, you know, God's got it. God knows what we need. You know, he will provide. And he wasn't saying those things as, you know, trite little kind of like nice things you do when you're kind of hanging out with your pastor. Of course, you're going to say that. No, he genuinely, you know, you could see he really believed it. He was living it. Now, 3 months later, he got a new job. When he told me the job he got, I laughed so hard because this guy has got two passions in life, building websites and football. Right? And his new job, I kid you not, was building websites for football clubs. Yes, he gets to visit football clubs for his job, okay? That's what he gets to do. Now, the point of the story is not that he got the job of his dreams, but that he viewed the problem through Jesus' eyes before anything changed or he got the job. And that was massively helpful for him and his family and everyone else when he went through that time. We had a similar thing happen with us back in, 12 years ago. We were buying a house. We got our mortgage all ready to go. We really felt God was calling us to buy this house. We'd had a few pictures and dreams. And we're like, okay, this is the house. This is the one. All of a sudden, the mortgage rules changed in the midst of us doing our mortgage application. All of a sudden, the sums did not add up anymore. And we were like, what are we going to do? And it was a tough time. But, you know, we look back and think, yeah, we really did work hard to view that problem through Jesus' eyes. This is a big problem, but God is bigger. And it was really helpful for us in that time. Now, to cut a long story short, God did make a way for it to happen. And it is the house we live in now. If you visited, that's the house. But again, the point of the story is not that I got the thing. The point of the story is viewing it all through Jesus' eyes as we were going through that. And that was the massively helpful, calming thing to do. Now, I don't know what's going on in your life. You know, you might look at the kids' work rota. I mean, I'm not picking out Lady Barn. Most of the sites are the same issue. You might look at the kids' work rota and be like, we don't have enough leaders and there's too many kids. The numbers don't add up. Some of the kids' work rota is like, yeah. And, you know, there's lots of things we can do. But one of the things to do is to think, yeah, it's a problem, but God is bigger than it. You know, we can view it through Jesus' eyes. And that, when we do that, it changes how we react to the problem. When you don't do that, you're like, we don't have enough kids work leaders. I'm on kids work every week. But when you view it through Jesus' eyes, you're like, yes, it's an issue. God knows, and we will deal with it, and we'll get somewhere good. There's just a different attitude you have when you're viewing it through Jesus' eyes. You may look at your finances and be like, look, there's just not enough. The numbers literally don't add up. Yes, that's a problem, but God is bigger. You know, we view it through his eyes, and it helps us in the midst of that. Now, you may look at, I don't know, your relationships in life, and some of them may not be healthy. Is that a problem? Yes. Is God bigger than that problem? Yes, he is. And viewing it through his eyes is so, so helpful. See, when we believe Jesus is our heavenly provider, that enables us to view things through his eyes. Very powerful thing to do and helps us as we live our lives for him. So this amazing miracle that we've looked at today, feeding of the 5,000, reminds us that Jesus is without doubt the heavenly provider. We all agree with that? You good? Okay. Those who don't probably haven't said anything. But anyway, but he is the heavenly provider. And when we believe Jesus is the heavenly provider, we can afford to live sacrificially and we can view things through his eyes. One final thing I want to share before I finish. When the crowd saw Jesus perform this amazing miracle, you may have noticed there's one verse I haven't read yet. So I don't want anyone to be shortchanged. So I will get to this verse. Now, when the crowd saw Jesus perform this miracle, it made them ask, naturally, who is this? Who can perform this thing? Now, back in Deuteronomy 18, Moses had promised the Israelites, the Lord your God will raise up for you a prophet like me from among your brothers. Now, the people knew this promise, and they were especially thinking about this promise because it was Passover time. So when we read verse 14, which says, after they saw the sign Jesus performed, they began to say, surely this is the prophet who has come into the world, the prophet who Moses spoke about. And you know what? They were right. They were absolutely right to make this connection. Jesus was the one whom Moses had prophesied about, but he was much more than just a prophet. He was the Messiah. He was the Holy One of God. He was the heavenly provider, the one who could provide miraculously from heaven, like we've seen today, but more than that, the one who could provide a way to heaven through the offering of himself, as he says himself, the bread of life, the offering of himself on the cross. So he provides miraculously from heaven for us, but he also provides us a way to heaven through the cross.
Thanks for listening.
To explore this sermon or learn more about our church, please navigate to the links provided in this podcast description.
From there, you can connect with us on social media. And you're welcome to check out the music links featured in this episode from our very own musicians.
You can also discover current events and information about where we meet on Sundays and various groups or community projects that you can join in with.
If you're interested in knowing more about us or wish to join us for one of our meetings, please reach out.
Simply drop us an email at hello@ccm.org.uk.
We look forward to connecting with you.